From Washington, the American Broadcasting Company brings you From the Capitol, a weekly interview program based on a major news story here in the nation's capital. This week, we're presenting Senator Jacob K. Javits, Republican of New York, who has proposed that the United States make some concessions to get a peaceful settlement of the Panama Canal crisis. Senator Javits will be interviewed by ABC News correspondents Bob Clark and John Ralston. First, Mr. Ralston.
Senator Javits, some members of your party seem to be finding some political potential in the Panama crisis. How do you think President Johnson is handling it?
Well, I think that it is always legitimate under the bipartisan foreign policy to discuss the reasons why we got in the spot we did. And it's entirely legitimate to, for example, complain about our not having an ambassador there, etc. That's one phase of the question. The second phase, however, is what do you do about it now? There, I think what we're doing about it now is just about what we can do in accordance with American tradition and principle. What we're trying to do is to work out some modifications of our situation in the canal zone, which will assuage the feelings and national pride of the Panamanians without sacrificing the fundamental need for the canal as an important link between the east and west coasts of the United States.
One of the things that's making any revision difficult is the cry from some members of both parties here in Congress demand that the president not give an inch.
Well, I'd be against that completely. We've already given inches before in respect of the flags, in respect of increasing the rental for the canal, in respect of equalizing the pay of Panamanians with those of Americans in the canal zone. Those are certainly matters which continue to be susceptible of further negotiation. As to the size of the canal zone, which I understand the Panamanians complain about, this is a question of fact as to what we think is essential to the strategic handling of the area and the operation of the canal itself. As to other muniments of sovereignty, I certainly would not stand on the fictions, but I would stand on the fact. The fact is that Panama probably cannot, standing as she is now, guarantee us a absolutely secure artery. And it may be that some form of international intercession to be sure that at all times the rights of the world are observed and fair relations are maintained, and not just our thinking they're fair, but they're really being fair between Panama and ourselves. If they're perhaps an Organization of American States auspices, these are possibilities. All of these are possibilities. But I certainly am not one of the school that says, stand fast, give nothing.
When you say international intercession, are you talking about international control of the Panama Canal?
I am not. I'm talking only really about any way in which the OAS, for example, could sponsor some of the major difficulties between us and Panama. Just to take a practical example, suppose the question of rental comes into issue on the basis of seeking to adjust it in some future date over a period of years. And suppose the United States and Panama should, let us say, in 10 years, absolutely disagree. I certainly can see the use of an international mechanism like the OAS to arbitrate the situation. The great countries have done that before, and without the utmost fairness. It's that kind of thing that I have in mind.
Are you flatly opposed to giving any consideration to any form of international control?
I would not say that. I do not believe that one can clang the door shut on what should be a response to honorable and legitimate grievances on the part of the Panamanians, and I think it would be a great mistake to make our prior eye conditions that we won't talk about this and we will talk about that. I think we can sit down and talk to the Panamanians and find out what really brought this on, but I would hope that we would talk to them in an atmosphere which is free from election pressures on them or on us. It may very well be that the best anybody can do right now is just to bring about peace and have a period of interregnum where both parties think it over carefully, work out what they can do in our case, what they want in their case, and then in a somewhat less troubled atmosphere really endeavor to bring the matter to a conclusion which will ensure happier relations for a long time ahead.
Do you think, Senator Javits, that the statements that have been coming from both Democrats and Republicans, that we can't retreat an inch or that we mustn't retreat a foot in the canal, are creating election pressures that will make it more difficult for President Johnson and for the Secretary of State to resolve the crisis?
You would be right if they were catching on, but I don't see them catching on. I think the broad bulk of the American people, as I sense it, and every one of us in politics has to have not only sensory but extrasensory perception, as I sense the feeling of the people, they feel that whatever is legitimate and honest that can be done to make the Panamanians feel that the deal is a good one for them too, should be done, but not in haste, and not with our back against the wall, and not with the sacrifice of the vital interest of our nation and the secure artery from the Atlantic to Pacific constantly available to us, without any sovereignty in it which would jeopardize freedom of transit.
Senator Javits, in the President's economic report to Congress today, we now have some specific indication of where this administration is going. What do you think generally of the way it started?
Well, I think that the President, being a real pro and having been around here a long time, has done all the things that you would expect and has come out for all the things you'd expect him to come out for. This is a very far cry from getting anything done. And President Kennedy, of lamented and beloved memory, had that problem with the Congress, too. It's one thing, he won a great election, and nonetheless he could get practically nothing done. And President Johnson may and may not have the same experience. It all depends upon his skill and ability and the power of appeal to the people which he puts behind his effort. For example, he undoubtedly will get a tax cut, and probably in the magnitude that that President Kennedy sought, somewhere in the area of $10 or $11 billion. From his economic report, he seems to be putting all his eggs in that basket, just as President Kennedy did. For myself, I think that shows a great lack of imagination and will be inadequate to the task. For the task is how to cut down an unacceptable rate of endemic unemployment, which is running us an unemployed at around the 4 million to 5 million level, which we cannot accept at a close to a 6% of the employable population. I don't see that the tax cut's going to cure that. I mean, it's going to help, but it isn't the answer. I think the answer is in many other things, in dealing with the automation problem and the changeover, which is estimated to be costing us as much as 40,000 jobs a week. That's an awfully high figure, but nonetheless, those are some authoritative estimates. In dealing with the antitrust laws, in dealing with the increase of our exports, in dealing with how to satisfy labor as to its participation in productivity on a profit sharing and similar basis, and so on. Those, Senator, I think, are necessary supplements to a tax cut.
Do you mean, Senator Javits, that you don't think President Johnson is spending enough money in dealing with such problems as job retraining?
I think our ideas on that are not well enough articulated. I wouldn't be afraid of spending more money for job retraining. That's a marvelous investment for the country. Let us remember that we're retraining not much more than 100,000 people right now under all our programs, if that many. And that we're talking about 1.25 million new jobs in the workforce every year, and the displacement of probably 1 million people a year who have to change their jobs because of automation. Secondly, I think the lack of imagination in the administration and retraining is the failure or inability to bring the whole private enterprise system in it in a very effective way, in a total national scheme for that purpose. Now, those are some of the things that I think must be done.
Senator, your fellow Republican Senator Barry Goldwater has had some very recent remarks on this problem, and if I understand him correctly, his main emphasis seems to be that if we unshackle business and let business prosper, automatically the unemployment problem and the poverty problem will be taken care of.
Well, now, we know that this doesn't happen. We know that in periods of prosperity there are less unemployed. We know in periods of prosperity there are less who are really under par economically. And I'm talking now about the family that's really poverty-stricken. None of us are overly rich, even though we're a great rich country. But I'm talking about the poverty-stricken family. Now, those things are all quantitative, and that's all that you get out of an increase in the business circulation without basic changes in the economic development which these families have. In short, you've got a certain amount that you've got to do in better education and guidance and counseling and retraining, which accelerated business isn't going to fix that. And then you've got a certain amount you've got to do, insofar as the unemployed are concerned, in giving them new opportunities. Now, accelerated business will help very materially with that. And one of the difficulties with this war on poverty of President Johnson's, and you can almost say that he brought on himself the Goldwater criticism, or that part of it which is legitimate, is the idea of sweeping under the rug unemployment under the guise that it is poverty. It is not. There are some unemployed who are not poor. There are a good many who are, and unemployment breeds poverty. But it doesn't make for that congenital poverty which is dependent upon a lack of education, upon the absence of parental control, and upon other broken families and other social causes. Now, if you mix up the two, it's not going to help either. And yet that's exactly what President Johnson is trying to do in his so-called war on poverty. You've got to keep them separate. Then you face your responsibility in each. Therefore, I say you need a conscious national program to war on poverty, fine. But that's the endemic poverty, which is not the poverty that deals with the cure of unemployment. And then you need a war on unemployment, which involves retraining to a much more massive extent by tying in a real set plan, the private enterprise system, than you have now under the existing federal programs.
What do you think, Senator Javits, of Senator Goldwater's recent statement that many Americans who live in poverty are poor because of low intelligence or ambition?
I have little doubt that that is, again, one of those partial truths. We know lots of shiftless people with all the opportunity in the world. They're still shiftless. And we've recently, in the last few years, changed these welfare laws and procedures where they, in many cases, need a change to be sure we didn't get tangled up in our own red tape, so that people were prevented from working even if they could or should work. But again, that doesn't deal with the problem of the age, the halt, the blind, those who really can't make it, those who have a bad educational opportunity, those who live in areas like the Appalachia, which I think is a very apt description, where opportunity is really passed out of the window and you got to go look elsewhere. And again, I say, sure, it's a partial truth, but it's by no means an answer or a valid answer to the fundamental point that a great nation like this shouldn't tolerate poverty any more than we tolerate unemployment.
Do you feel that basically Senator Goldwater's attitude is to tolerate the poverty that exists?
I think that's endemic in what he says. I think it's endemic in this naturalistic philosophy that you have to accept a certain amount of poverty. It's just one of the facts of life and one of the acts of God. You have to accept a certain amount of unemployment. And mind you, none of us are talking about floating employment, seasonal unemployment, people who choose not to work for a while, and so on. We're talking about those people who really want jobs. And it is this naturalistic idea of Senator Goldwater's that I do not agree with at all.
Senator Javits, you're, of course, a very strong supporter of Governor Rockefeller for the presidential nomination. We've just gotten the opening salvos so far in the battle between Mr. Rockefeller and Senator Goldwater. It's obvious that this is going to be a very bitter and divisive fight within the Republican Party for the nomination. Is there a danger that the fight is going to be so bitter that it will harm the Republican Party and perhaps cost it the presidential election next fall?
I do not believe that a Rockefeller-Goldwater fight will cost the Republican Party the presidential election. In my judgment, a Republican can win in 64. And he can win if he has the mettle and the program that goes with the mettle. I'm talking about M-E-T-T-L-E, the stuff that it takes to be a president. And I believe that the more excitement that's generated in the Republican Party, the more the public feels that it is a seedbed of ideas, that it's stirring, will be more rather than less of an assurance with respect to our chances.
You think Republicans will still be able to join ranks after the convention and support whoever the party nominates?
I will not tell you that there won't be some dissidents who will stay home and sit on their hands and say they'll be hanged if they'll vote for whichever is the fellow that gets nominated. But when you compare that with the leverage of ideas and personality and interest in the Republican Party, in the public at large, it becomes insignificant, so that the net balance will be, in my judgment, a big gain. The fight's a good one, not a bad one.
And you would be able to support Senator Goldwater if he should gain the nomination without any reservations?
Well, I have dealt with that subject many, many times, and I have not said what you're saying at all. I have said that I must judge Senator Goldwater, if he is the nominee, based on what he stands for at the time and on his willingness to undertake a commitment in which I can have confidence and many others can have confidence to support the Republican platform, assuming that it's a platform somewhat like our 1960 platform. I cannot, as an American and as a senator, just say blindly, I will go along. I just cannot do that in this case.
Senator Javits, there have been a couple of new polls over this past weekend showing that your candidate, Governor Rockefeller, is far down the list of Republican candidates in popularity. Do you think that he can overcome this the lead the others have?
Well, in the first place, I don't join in the use of the word overcome. There have been other candidates nominated by us on the Republican side and the Democratic side who were down on the list, that weren't the number one. And so that, in my opinion, is not final. Besides which, whose list is it? It may be a Gallup poll or some other poll, title of great respect, but not the law of the Medes and the Persians. It's not infallible. So that's one. Secondly, I do believe that the governor has ground to make up. But I think he can make it up, as he demonstrates in an intensive campaign, especially in these primaries, to the people of the nation, that he is the man who has the character and the ability and the ideas to give the American people answers to these vexing questions, some of which we've been discussing, and the whole range of them on the foreign front, Cuba, Vietnam, Communist China, Berlin, and the dozens of other things that have the seeds of war in them.
Senator, the first primary, of course, is in New Hampshire in March. What's your reading of how Governor Rockefeller is doing there?
Well, I think he's making progress there. I think he's making himself known to the people of New Hampshire. I think his chances are good in New Hampshire. And he certainly is having a fair crack at it with a representative sample of the New England states. And that's all any man can ask for.
Will either Governor Rockefeller or Senator Goldwater have to drop out if he loses New Hampshire?
I do not think so. Unless something disastrous happens to either one of them in the New Hampshire primary, I cannot see that this is the determinative primary for them. I think that it is one of the innings of the ball game, and every inning's important, and it's always conceivable to win the ball game in an inning, but it doesn't reasonably happen.
Governor Scranton of Pennsylvania is being mentioned more and more as a logical compromise candidate, the middleman between Rockefeller and Goldwater, who can reunite the party. How do his chances look to you, Senator Javits?
Well, I think the chances for dark horses, naturally, have somewhat improved, but that's still very far from the mark, because I think the overwhelming feeling that I have, and most of the people in the country have, are that the leading candidates, to wit, Rockefeller and Goldwater, will fight it out right to the last bell, and that most likely, one never knows, most likely, it will be one or the other. But there's, I think, an enhanced chance for a dark horse now because of the imponderable of a new opponent that they will each be facing, to wit, President Johnson, rather than President Kennedy, who was a relatively known opponent in presidential terms. So that I would somewhat escalate the chances for a dark horse. And Governor Scranton is certainly a very respectable dark horse, but he's still a dark horse. And it's most likely that the contest will be between the two contenders.
We haven't mentioned Mr. Nixon yet. The Harris poll, which is published today, shows that among Republican voters, Nixon is favored almost 2-1 over either Mr. Goldwater or Mr. Rockefeller. Do you think Mr. Nixon is one of those dark horses you're talking about?
I would say that, yes, but except that I think in Nixon's case, you could hardly say a dark horse, a man who's been the previous candidate for president. I should rather describe him as one of those distinguished people in the country to whom the party would turn at a time when it felt itself frustrated. What do we do now? Attitude. Then you might turn to a man like Nixon. Now you have to remember, however, in his case, that he has a real problem at the convention in that he needs a state delegation to put him forward, and a state delegation that's logical for him. Normally, of course, it would have been the California delegation. Now he has left California, and probably that is no longer open to him. This presents a real question, by no means insuperable, so that I would say in answer, and of course he's in New York, and conceivably New York might go for him, though seems most unlikely, with the strong feelings that I have and so many other Republicans have about Governor Rockefeller and the fact that the state committee has already endorsed Governor Rockefeller for the presidential nomination. So it seems to me that door would be closed too. But nonetheless, notwithstanding these difficulties and barriers, I think Vice President Nixon rates consideration among those who are alternatives to the two contenders. But again, I repeat, it is most likely, in my judgment, that it will be one of the two leading contenders.
On the possibility that New York might go for Mr. Nixon, do you think it's possible that the time would come that Governor Rockefeller would lose a couple of primaries or a string of them, and that he himself might then turn and support Mr. Nixon before the convention?
I cannot, I would never speculate on that. I do not believe that Governor Rockefeller contemplates for one moment any change in his stance, and I don't believe that the New York delegation, in great majority, would contemplate any change in its position right down to the final wire at the convention.
You think the governor will go all the way to the convention even if he loses all the way to the convention?
Well,
in primaries?
Again, these are very, very iffy questions. But as I read the intention of the party in my state, as I read the governor's intention in my state, as I read my own feelings in the matter, I think we are duty-bound in fairness to all the things in which we believe to fight this thing out right into convention time. And beyond that, what might happen in the dynamics of life at a convention, your guess is as good as mine. But one can either have an intention to quit somewhere along the line, or one can have an intention to go right through. And the intention to go right through, it seems to me, is very clear. That's why I said what I did about the Vice President Nixon, for whom we have the greatest respect, of course.
Senator Javits, one of the problems that both Republicans and Democrats are going to have to face at their conventions this year, of course, is civil rights. How are you going to write a civil rights plank in the GOP platform that will please Mr. Goldwater, Mr. Rockefeller, and you?
Well, I think that the party has to be true to itself. And the 1960 civil rights platform, though it wasn't everything that I'd like to see it, is itself a pretty powerful statement. So we've got a precedent to go by. I want to see us, at the very least in civil rights, show some progress, not retrogression. So that I think, like other things, it'll have to be fought out, and I believe that the preponderant sentiment of the party will be for a strong and effective civil rights plank in the tradition of Lincoln.
Senator Javits, the Ways and Means Committee has now resumed consideration of the medical care bill, and you testified today. Do you see any real chance that this could become law this year?
I really do. I think that there is a tremendous demand for it. It's kind of a sleeper issue, which is now getting renewed attention, and I think we really have an excellent plan, which I proposed to the Ways and Means Committee, a public-private plan for the kind of medical care coverage which has a good chance to pass.
What if you get a Republican candidate for the presidency who is opposed to the Medicare bill this year, Senator Javits? Where will that put you in the campaign?
Well, I'm not narrow enough in my thinking to decide yay or nay on a candidate based on one issue. I'm rather hopeful that a man of any kind of progressive views will have a balanced enough view to accommodate a reasonable medical care for the aging plan. But I'm not pinning my support, yay or nay, on one particular issue. And that's, I'd like that clear as far as Senator Goldwater is concerned. There are just too many points there that make me take the position of wanting to wait and see rather than just some difference on one particular issue.
Senator Javits, if Senator Goldwater should be the Republican nominee for president, could he carry your state of New York?
I would never wish to weight the scales against any candidate by giving an opinion on a state, but I will say that Governor Rockefeller is the much more likely winner in New York State as the Republican presidential nominee by far than Senator Goldwater.
Senator Javits, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our guest on From the Capitol was Senator Jacob K. Javits, Republican of New York. He was interviewed by ABC News correspondents Bob Clark and John Ralston. We hope you'll join us again next week at the same time for another program, From the Capitol. From the Capitol is produced by Peggy Wheaton, a presentation of the Washington Bureau of ABC News. Howard Cosell Sports Mornings on the ABC Radio Network.
This is Richard Bate, ABC Washington, with the latest news and comment from ABC Radio. In the top of the news, nighttime talks at the White House on Panama, the blizzard of 64, and a foreign assignment for the Attorney General. In a moment, the details.
Most of the time, brakes stop cars. All too often, other cars stop cars. But in those sudden stops, what stops the car passengers? Dashboards and windshields and seat belts. Seat belts are best because they stop you safely. Can stop at least 5,000 deaths a year, one-third of all serious injuries. Wrap a margin of safety around your family. Buckle up for safety with seat belts.
And now the news. The White House is buzzing tonight with talk of the crisis in Panama, although late reports from that strife-torn trouble spot indicate that there is a lull in the anti-American demonstrations so far tonight, with business getting back to normal and the Organization of American States agreed upon as a peacemaker. For a report from the White House, here's ABC's Bill Lawrence.
At this moment, President Johnson is meeting in the White House with his top-level negotiating team that returned by jet less than an hour ago from the violence-torn Panama Canal zone. Assistant Secretary of State Mann and Army Secretary Cyrus Vance are reporting to the President, to Secretary of State Rusk, and to Defense Secretary McNamara on the preliminary agreements that have reduced tensions and started the dispute toward settlement. But grave issues still remain.
I think it would be very difficult for Senator Goldwater to win a presidential election. I think his chances are even more difficult now that a Southerner is in the White House. There were certain forces and individuals in the South that would have supported Senator Goldwater if he had been nominated and if the late President Kennedy had lived. But now it is different, and I think it would be very difficult for Senator Goldwater to win an election.
Integration leader Martin Luther King before ABC microphones today in Washington. If the present trend continues, the Wisconsin Republican presidential primary on April 7th is going to be pretty tame. Republican Congressman John Burns has agreed to run as a favorite son if all eight major Republican presidential hopefuls agree to stay out of the primary. The move is designed to keep Wisconsin from becoming a Republican battleground, and it looks as if the plan may succeed. So far, Senator Goldwater and Governor Rockefeller and Senator Margaret Chase Smith have indicated they'll go along unless forced into the primary. Strife-torn Cyprus has agreed in principle to the idea of letting the United Nations send an observer to the island where British troops now maintain a shaky ceasefire. The plan was suggested by Britain, Turkey, and Greece. And there is a faint ray of hope tonight out in the vastness of the Pacific Ocean, where the Air Force is still searching for traces of that cargo plane and its nine crewmen missing for 6 days. An oil slick was spotted today in the regular shipping lanes. There's no provable connection to the missing plane as yet, but the Air Force is taking a closer look at the oily spot in the sea and is also checking on reports of some debris 167 miles away. And that's the latest on the lost plane. The East German communists are putting the pressure on in Berlin again, insisting that any future talks about travel through the Berlin Wall be conducted for West Berlin by its Mayor Willy Brandt. The Western allies oppose the plan, warning that if Mayor Brandt agrees to negotiate directly with the communists, this would jeopardize the Western position, which does not recognize the East German government. The police in Birmingham say no charges will be made against three Alabama National Guardsmen who admit exploding a bomb in racially tense Birmingham last October. The three say they set off the bomb near a Negro residential area in order to create more strife so they could stay on duty in Birmingham. Police say there's not enough evidence against the guardsmen to warrant bringing charges. And the government's going back to work on the railroads, or at least on the work rules problems. Union and management representatives have been meeting jointly. Now they'll be meeting with government mediators. You've been listening to the latest news and comment from ABC Radio. This is Richard Bate, ABC, Washington.
Paul Harvey News, weekdays. On the ABC Radio Network.